Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
Well, welcome to the kickoff of another weekend of Notre Dame football as we get going with Evan Sharpley. I am Sean Stiers, Sean and Sharpley, and the Leprechaun Lunch. We're presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit sharpleytraining.com. I tell you what, you better enjoy what qualifies as good weather today.
Yeah,
because it sounds like it's going to be a wet one tomorrow for the football game.
Lucky us, huh?
Yes.
Bring out the hot chocolate.
Sit inside, stay dry. I don't think they have hot chocolate over there anymore. They used to always, well, in any case, they do at the concessions.
Yes, they do.
Let's put it that way. Nobody cares about what we
That's
get.
That's right. That's right. No one cares.
But we are ready. We've got Notre Dame Wake Forest tomorrow, 3:41 kickoff here on WSBT. Game day coverage starts at 9 tomorrow morning with the Jack Swarbrick Show, Brian Kelly Show at 10. Then at 11 a.m., it's game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl. They will be over at Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Meet their guests, get autographs, get pictures with them, and enjoy some delicious Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue. The guest this week, former Fighting Irish captain and center, Mike, is it Oriard?
Mm-hmm.
Oriard, who snapped the ball to both Terry Hanratty and Joe Theismann.
Not bad.
Yep, not bad. 1994 Cotton Bowl MVP, tailback Lee Becton.
He's been on the show a few times for us.
I'm sure he has. He's a good one, too.
Yeah.
And then Fighting Irish 2012 BCS playoff team center, Braxton Cave. A couple of centers over there.
Well, and then Braxton's wife and his daughter had just had a play date with my daughter here.
Oh,
really.
Yeah. Nice.
They're best friends, apparently.
Little besties,
yeah,
right?
Right.
At what? Both less than 1 year old?
They are both unless one. Yeah, 1 year. My daughter's about 5 months old, and Braxton's daughter's a couple months older than her. So
I think they had
a lot of fun.
I think when I filled in for you last year, Braxton was on the show. And if I remember right, his wife was with him. And mm-hmm. She was still with child at that time.
Yeah.
So that's how I remember.
Braxton's back in the area now full time. He's working at Lippert Components.
Good.
And then actually Trevor Robinson, another offensive lineman that played with Braxton and I know as well, he's doing the same thing.
All right. Awesome. Good deal. A lot of former players in the area and that kind of stuff. Good deal. Then, of course, at noon, it's Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, and I. Pregame show from IMG starts at 2:30. The game at 3:41. After the game, Darren and Reggie Brooks, and always with a special guest, we'll have the postgame show, and I'll have player interviews from down on the field as well. All right. So the big news, of course, this week, Evan, college football playoff rankings came out, and I'll run down the top 10 just for kind of a quick refresher course. Georgia is number one, Alabama number two, Notre Dame is number three, Clemson in at number four, so those are obviously the most important spots right now. Oklahoma, followed by Ohio State, Penn State, TCU, Wisconsin, and Miami round out the top 10. So just your thoughts on that.
It's the first week.
That's exactly it.
And that's usually kind of my feel. You have to have a place to start, and I don't know if there's going to be too many arguments, you know. You can go back and forth, I think, between Georgia and Alabama. And obviously Georgia has a pretty good resume right now, both teams undefeated. If you're going to have Georgia number one, Notre Dame's obviously got to be in the mix in the top four. The one that's interesting is kind of that Clemson, Oklahoma State, Ohio State area.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, strength of schedule. You know, Clemson has NC State this weekend. If they win, I think they would validate their position there. But certainly, I think it's tough to have, say, like an Ohio State jump in there over Oklahoma, having lost to them. So it's a baseline. You know, it's a good place to start. And I'm looking at Wisconsin's schedule. I mean, they could easily go undefeated the second half of their schedule. You know, Iowa's in there.
At least into the Big Ten championship.
Right, at least into the Big Ten championship game, sure. Their path, I think, there will – I don't know if it'll cause problems or issues, but you know what you could have happen is if they make it to the Big Ten championship game undefeated and say lose, and then you have a Big Ten champ with one loss, mm-hmm. too, you know, how is that going to muddy the water as far as the national landscape is concerned?
Darren and I were talking the other day after the rankings came out. Let's say Wisconsin runs the table. Let's say they're undefeated.
Yeah.
Is there any way an undefeated Big Ten champion, regardless of how soft the regular season schedule is, can you leave them out of the playoff?
I don't think you could.
I don't think so either.
Because it would, and then there'd be a two loss. Well, there could be. We'd have to check. Ohio State, Penn State, both with one loss. They already played each other, so you could potentially have one of those teams in the championship game playing an undefeated Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
lose to have their second loss, and either Penn State or Ohio State could still have one.
Right.
So you could have an undefeated Big Ten champ,
kind of like
a one loss Big Ten team
scenario last year, where all those things came into play because if you had this team beating this team in the Big Ten, Penn State got hammered by Michigan, but then beat Ohio State, and all this different stuff came up. And then just the fact that one division is so loaded,
right.
in the Big Ten,
yes.
and the other is not.
For really since the beginning, mm-hmm. since it was set up. And we could talk about SEC, too. I mean, you have Georgia and Alabama.
Right.
But, of course, I mean, what happens if you, in the SEC championship game, you have one loss? I mean, it's going to be hard to say, okay, a one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Georgia is not going to make it, correct?
Yeah. But at the same time, they could both make it, just depending
right.
on what happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's what's got everybody stirred up. And as you said, it's the first week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's probably going to be a year where things don't take care of themselves.
They usually do.
But history shows us things take care of themselves. Everyone gets all kind of bunched up and bent out of shape about, well, what if this happens? What if this happens?
Well, we got a lot of time on our hands.
Yeah, more
time. We got a lot of time on our hands. We got to figure out all these scenarios.
Those things don't happen. Yeah, that's right.
But for the teams, I mean, and for Notre Dame, it's still what we've talked about over the last 2 or 3 weeks, single elimination tournament game. If they don't win, they're not going to be a part of it. They continue to win, they at least are going to build a resume that warrants a discussion to be in the top four.
And that's kind of what Brian Kelly had to say about it this week.
Honestly, giving you the truth in this answer, we just want to dominate this weekend. If we do that, we'd like three more chances. And then at the end of the year, if they say that that's one of the four best teams, that'll be fine. You know, but that's not, we're just looking to dominate this weekend. That's all I can tell you.
And that's kind of how, I mean, that has to be every team's attitude going in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the approach you have to take. If you get too caught up in where you are, where you should be, especially right now, you know, the time for that is going to be the season is over. Notre Dame wins the rest of their games, whether they're in or out. If they're out, then they're going to have the opportunity to say, we should be in.
Do you think that a couple of years ago when they were in a similar position, they were fourth, do you think they got maybe too sidetracked by that? Or was it just that team maybe wasn't good enough, and that's what caught up with them?
I think it's a different mentality right now. I think the entire state of the program, from a mental standpoint, a physical standpoint, X's and O's, there's a different feel. If it was close or messy wins, you know, these are dominating performances over the last, I mean, since Georgia, I mean, they've all been dominating performances.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's on tape. You're seeing a team that is consistently getting better. And that's what you'd like to see is moving into the month of November. There aren't a lot of concerns or questions. You know, there's a few guys, dinged up with some, and you'd expect they aren't the catastrophic injuries that have occurred over the past few years, but you expect some of those types of things at this point of the season. But in whole, you have a healthy team, you have a focused team, and you have a team that I think is peaking at the right time.
With that in mind, do you buy or sell that it's enough just for Notre Dame to win out the rest of these games? Because they do still have a tough schedule. Wake Forest isn't going to be a pushover. Miami next week. Navy coming up. They lost to Temple last night, which was interesting.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season.
Is Temple then a top the ACC right now?
I'll have to look at that here
they
in a second.
They may be.
But do you buy or sell that it's enough just to win?
So they have to win big.
Or do you have to keep winning big?
Yeah. in my mind, you went out. I don't see what would keep out Notre Dame unless it does have to do with the conference affiliations and I guess an Armageddon type of situation where you would maybe have an undefeated Big Ten champ and a one loss Big Ten champ, or you know, same thing in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, style points, yes, but the teams that are on the schedule, even if they win a close game, they're playing good teams. It's not like you're going to go and you know win a 1-point game to substitute a weak opponent in there,
right?
You know, enter any of one of those. It's not like that. I mean, aside, you know, Wake Forest and Navy maybe don't have the appeal of NC State and USC, but you have an undefeated Miami on the road right now,
right?
And you're going to have Stanford that's been a 10-plus win team over the past decade almost on the road. So you have two true road games to solidify your resume against top 25 opponents.
Yeah, there's a bigger magnifying glass right now, and I think it's even more so for the teams inside the top four because I feel like they have to validate every week. They have to prove why they deserve to be there, especially when you have a team like Miami and even Wisconsin, who are both undefeated and sitting outside that deep. Top four.
Yeah, they're
deep. They're 9-10 right now, and they're the two undefeated teams. But I feel like if you're in the top four, you have to validate and prove each week that you deserve to have one of those four spots.
And you can't afford
to play sloppy.
And for those two teams, I mean, Miami especially, they've got Notre Dame on the schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, why complain now when if you're looking for your statement win, there it is.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's a little bit different because if you look at their schedule, there really isn't, at least on their regular season schedule until they get to the Big Ten Championship, they could be floating outside that four spot until the Big Ten Championship week.
Right.
That would be really interesting if that's how it plays out.
And they probably will. Michigan is the biggest test they have as far as the regular season goes. Really good defense, not so good offense, and that's putting it
Brandon
politely.
Peters, a little spark on the offensive side playing mm-hmm. quarterback this last week, and who knows? And that's been the biggest thing is it's hard to rely on the defense the entire season. You got to have some offense, and that's kind of where they are right now.
I mean, and I guess the bigger point is you can win a close game if you're Notre Dame or any of these teams. You just can't look bad in the process.
Sure.
You can win a game like against Georgia, for example. You can win a close game against a good team, Miami, Stanford, whoever mm-hmm. it happens to be, but you can't go out there and look like they did against Boston College a couple of years ago, a bad team, and commit a bunch of turnovers and expect that you're going to stay in there.
Right. What it would be is that was a great game between two great teams.
Right.
And Notre Dame won.
Right. Exactly.
It might be by a field goal, but it's still a win.
Yeah. Big difference between those two. Now, to answer your question, Temple is 2-3 now in the AAC. They are kind of sitting middle of the pack. Central Florida remains undefeated, 7-0 overall, 4-0 in conference play. Memphis, a team that beat Navy a few weeks ago, had it in their first loss. They're 4-1 and 7-1 in the other division. But Navy, all of a sudden, has lost three straight. They're 5-3, 3-3.
Didn't see that one coming because they had cracked the top 25 before that.
Yeah. But again, I watched that Showtime show, Inside Navy Football, early, and they just didn't quite look like they've been the standard that they've set the last mm-hmm. few years. Zach Abey, good quarterback, and he's among the leading rushers in the nation. But when you think about it, Navy's offense is typically their full. But the quarterback is right there, but it's typically the fullback, and they don't have that big second option. My computer over here is going crazy right now. They don't have that big
that
second option
there
beyond the quarterback. Yeah, right. And they're doing some different stuff and not quite as good defensively, they don't look like. But I mean, that's good news for Notre Dame. We'll find out here.
And looking at it, I mean, you look at each opponent here for Notre Dame moving forward, and let's just specifically look at what Notre Dame has done well this year, and it's been rush the football on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And each team is, I believe, above 50th in rush defense. So what's left on the schedule pairs up really well with what Notre Dame does on the offensive side.
Absolutely.
To be able, I mean, especially for Josh Adams, too, to kind of continue his track of what's going on. And I found it interesting, the head coach for North Carolina State made a couple of comments yesterday about the balance or differences between Clemson, which they're playing Clemson this week, and mm-hmm. Notre Dame, and basically saying that Notre Dame's not as balanced because all they want to do is run the football. And that if it hadn't
been... But they ran it down your throat. But if you had the sixth, you had the sixth best rush defense in the country, and they ran it down your throat. And then, of course, he tried to blame injuries.
Four or five guys getting hurt in seven minutes.
Now, that's valid, but it's football, and it's late October. Everyone's got injuries. And
have a better strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, well, there you go, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But also the fact that this... I mean, he blamed penalties, even though there were... There was stuff like the holding call that should have been called on when Miles Boykin was going out for the pass that didn't get called. He blamed penalties, which went both ways. They do in every game. That's just the way it goes. And then he blamed the injuries. And when you look at, yeah, they had some defensive tackles and stuff like that that got banged up. But statistically, they weren't great.
Notre Dame guys that
shouldn't have mattered that much.
Right.
And that's Notre Dame's going to do that to everybody. Sour grapes, it just seems like. All right, 12:16, Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. I wanted to ask you real quick, we're going to talk about the strength and conditioning program at Notre Dame here in a minute. I wanted to play something for you. There's someone not completely sold on the Irish is ESPN's David Pollack, who's part of the game day and their college football coverage, obviously. He and Todd McShay were dissecting the top four the other day. And this is what Pollack had to say about Notre Dame.
Todd, here's my difference when I look at these teams. Clemson can absolutely suffocate you defensively.
Yes.
Georgia can suffocate you defensively. Alabama can suffocate you defensively. All three of those teams that we just talked about can do that. And I will say that there are question marks about their offense. Kelly Bryant, can he beat you consistently? Jalen Hurts, can he beat you consistently?
Yep.
Jake Fromm, can he beat you consistently? Notre Dame still has that. They can run the ball. Can the quarterback beat you? But they're not as suffocating defensively. That's where I think Notre Dame...
They're a lot better. But I agree. They're better, not at that level.
But they're not even close personnel-wise, size-wise, athleticism-wise as those other teams.
So I think there are some valid things in there. But just what do you think about when you hear that?
Well, you're talking about the top three teams. They're good for a reason. We saw Georgia's defense. He's hitting the nail on the head. They are suffocating.
Yeah.
I don't think that you discount that. You look at Notre Dame as an entire team, okay? And there might be some truth to the in terms of depth between,
right,
you know, guys that are in the first string, second string, third string, overall athleticism and talent compared to maybe Alabama and Georgia. I get that.
And let's not forget, you've got some freshmen, true freshmen,
they're playing
defensive linemen playing,
yes,
a lot right now as part of that rotation. So they're not physically there yet, but they're still contributing, and they were part of that inside the 10-yard line stand against NC State last week, too.
I think what maybe can be missed in this is you look at what Mike Elko has done at Bowling Green. You look at what he did at Wake Forest. I don't think you would look at those defenses and say, man, those are suffocating defenses like Pollack is describing an Alabama or a Georgia or even a Clemson at this point. But what his MO is and has been is keeping the points down,
which they've done,
creating turnovers. Right now they're 10th in the nation.
Right.
10th. That's fantastic. 16.1 points a game. You're going to
still the only team in the country
that hasn't allowed
more than 20 points in a game.
Correct.
Yeah, and one rushing touchdown as well.
That's unbelievable.
That rushing touchdown came week 2 in the third quarter. Sony Michel. Since then, 26 quarters have passed.
That's crazy.
Since they've allowed a rushing touchdown.
And this is how I described how Notre Dame's defense needed to play before the season. It was opportunistic. That's different than suffocating.
Yeah.
But you can still win a lot of football games being opportunistic. I think they've taken it a step further. That's how it started. They're getting off the field on third downs. They're creating turnovers. And when you're able to do that, and they're pressuring the quarterback in different ways than Alabama, than Georgia.
Well, let's not forget, okay, are they on the level, front seven specifically, are they on the level of Georgia's front seven? No.
No.
Georgia moves sideline to sideline. They're bigger and more physical and just stronger than Notre Dame's front. But at the same time, Georgia's a team offensively that's averaging 35.5 points a game. Or right, 35 points a game, right in that range. Notre Dame held them to 20 that day. So while they're not the same on that same level, they still held a really good
what's turned out to be a really good Georgia offense to almost half of their scoring average for the season.
Did it to USC?
And they've done it.
Did it to NC State?
Yeah, all these teams. And I mean, Ronald Jones, the USC running back, he averages a yard more per carry than Saquon Barkley, and he had nothing against Notre Dame that night. I think they suffocated.
Yeah.
I think they suffocated Sam Darnold as well that night. Very first play of the game. It's what your definition of suffocated is, I
or
guess.
Or how, I guess, how flashy it is.
Right.
I mean, is it playing within the system, or is it we've got guys that can run sideline to sideline?
Yeah. They do it in a different way. Yeah. It's just
they might not
jump out at you on film the same way.
But get, you know, guys like Tavon Coney. I mean, he is, over the last couple of weeks, I mean, he's got some great physical skills. This isn't to say that there aren't athletes on this. I mean, there's great athletes on this Notre Dame team. You look at what Julian Love's doing. I mean, he's playing at a high level right now.
Tavon Coney.
I mean, just keeps getting better and better. Yeah, Drew Tranquil is thriving in this role that, and I think that's been the biggest thing, is defining the roles that these players have so that they're able to play free and fast, compared to, you know, a little more of a structured or strict setup that we saw over the last few years.
It's part of coaching, right? Play to the strengths that you've got on your team, figure out what makes
them
work.
And that changes yearly.
Yeah.
Especially at the college level, you got guys that leave and graduate, and you have to be able to morph and find guys that fit into the mold and not necessarily say, here is our strict structure. What can we get out of each guy? You know, it's when Niles Morgan leaves, the Mike linebacker position is probably going to look a little bit different. I wouldn't say that there's a guy specifically like him. There's some guys that are going to have slightly similar traits, but it's going to look, you know, and we're talking 2018 now, it's going to look a little bit different.
Right.
And I think that's what Mike Elko has done, is you look at his teams at Wake. One year it was the Buck. One year it was the Mike. Then it was the Mike again. Then it was the Rover. They're playing to the strengths of those guys, and they were able to thrive in those roles and have really good seasons.
Now, part of the reason Notre Dame has been able to have this resurgence, one, Mike Elko, two, right along with that, is the change in philosophy in the strength and conditioning program. Director of football, is it football performance, Matt Bayless?
Yeah, it's a good title.
Yeah, and performance is what it's turned out to be. It remains head and shoulders a different team than last year. And one of the strengths, I mean, it's shown on the field in different ways, including they've outscored opponents 131-57 in the second half this season.
So that's twofold. That's coaching, that's, you know, that's adjustments, but it's also being in physical shape to go out and execute in the third and the fourth quarter.
So Kelly said this week that his team is stronger now than it was back in August, and he got really specific with some of the details.
No, we have numbers that speak to strength gains in the weight room. You know, our ability to track it now has really given us a physical edge as we go into each and every week, and it's something that we can relay to our players weekly. Again, we've made incredible strides during the season. We're a stronger football team today than we were in August.
There are a lot of different things that go along with that, and your eyes kind of lit up just when we started to talk about this.
It's like being in the dark ages and then all of a sudden jumping into the 21st century is what happened. And we're talking about tracking data. This isn't a new concept. I've been doing it with our athletes at Tripoli Training for almost 3 years.
Really?
So that begs the question, why did it take so long? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But it is amazing what they are doing. You know, there was a lot of talk of the GPS units implemented a couple of years ago. Jake Flint's doing a great job looking at those numbers and how they can track practice. That's something, you know, I think that a lot of older school coaches had a difficult time with is, well, these guys should never be resting. They should never be walking on the field. Well, that's not true. You have to maximize.
When you're doing that.
Exactly. So you have that aspect of it that you can track. And if a great guy to give a follow on Twitter is Dave Ballou.
Okay.
He came from IMG, and he's doing a lot of the program. He really focuses on the velocity training, the speed training of power movements. So it's not just okay to be strong. That is great. But can you be fast with the weight that you're moving or the movements that you're performing.
We hear a lot about speed squats and things like that that Brian Kelly has mentioned.
It's all velocity training, and they have a program, the Elite Forms at Notre Dame, where if you're in a squat rack or you know anytime you're in the squat rack, you can use it for bench, you know, clean, deadlift, really any movement. You can hook these, you can hook the TrueForm up to it, or Elite Form up to it, and what you can do with it is it actually measures the speed of the bar, so from the ground to wherever it's going. All right. So what's really neat about that is, you know, over time, and especially if you're doing a high rep set, you know, are you continuing to be explosive? What is the force application that you are actually creating? And I'm working with a company called Tex right now. It's an Australian-based company, and they're doing work here in the U.S. Fast Twitch is what it's called. It's a similar movement, but there's also, so with the Elite Form, we're using the bar, right? The bar is moving usually in one direction. So it's not just this, now with this Tex company, it's not just the speed up. You're getting the extension, the flexion, so it's the movement up and down, or if it's an oblique movement, side to side, or if it's a knee movement, it's a pull and a contraction. So it's both. And that's really the wave as far as training is going, is measuring the output of how fast you're moving something. And then within that, and what's neat is you can actually find, I did some baseline testing yesterday with this on, you know, are you right quad dominant or left quad dominant or hamstring, or are you not, you know? And what we found with my training was I wasn't doing enough eccentric training with my legs, where when I was doing jump squats, my quads were firing, but I wasn't controlling or pulling down fast enough to cycle through to get to fast twitch to jump quicker because of my posterior chain. So my glutes and my hamstrings on the way down were not controlled enough. So I needed to do more pause squats.
Interesting.
So those are going to be implemented. And that's that's such a great training tool. And for me, like, man, this type of stuff gets me fired up, because you're pairing the scientific approach with tracking the data.
And it's specific, essentially, all this stuff you're talking about, to each player.
So
they're
got,
all doing all this work, but it's
you've got
it's
100
specific.
Personal plans.
Right.
Now, there's a broad, overarching program that, you know, Matt Bayless is going to sit down with, and David Blue and Flint and David Grimes and the rest of the training staff, and say, here are moves that we want to accomplish. But now within that, each player can have correctives. And you've heard Coach Kelly talk about this a little bit too, which the correctives are really important, because that's going to prevent injury. And the one other thing with the previous staff, it was very much Olympic lifting, you know, bench, squat, deadlift, which those things, you still need those things. You want to create that pure strength.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to add the velocity base, the speed strength portion of it, because that's going to be applicable to the football field. Also, as far as the soft tissue injuries that we saw over the last 5+ years, players didn't know how to decelerate or slow down right. I mean, one example is if you look at the Jalen Smith injury, he got pushed and then he slowed down. He was just trying to slow down, right? So if you don't understand how your stabilizers work, and you're not training for those things, like gymnasts do, or getting an offensive lineman on a BOSU ball and having him balance on one leg, right? That's tough for a 300-pound guy.
Sure.
But I'm sure that those things weren't happening. And now you're seeing a shift to what you would say is a conjugate method of training, where we're not going to prescribe to just one thing. We're going to bring in some gymnastics. We're still going to do some of our Olympic lifting. We're going to do some chains. We're going to push some sleds. We're going to use the Elite Forms. We're going to do some yoga. We're going to focus on the whole aspect of it, but it's still all about being able to apply that and say, hey, how much force, how much power can we apply on the field versus let's try to add another 100 pounds to our squat. Let's move the bar faster. Let's block that person in front of you. Let's move them faster and with more force.
And if you are a high school or even college athlete and you want to find out more, boom, Sharply Training. Train with Sharply Training and be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234.
Was that a good commercial right there?
I mean, you nailed it. To me, what's amazing, though, is just the short amount of time that all of this stuff has shown really dramatic effects, because it's not all about X's and O's, what they're able to do. A ton of it has to do as well. Just when you look at the fact, yeah, that's a good offensive line, and they have to do certain things within the confines of their offense, but it's also in the second half when they just wear on these guys and they still have the leg drive and they still have all these things and they're just Quentin Nelson pancaking guys in the third and fourth quarter and beating them down.
I mean, what Coach Bess said when he came in, too, we interviewed him. He said it usually takes 2 full years to implement the entire program and to see those. You know, you're going to see things right away. And I don't mean to, if anybody out there is kind of starting a new diet or working out and you're hearing it takes 2 years, right? It is a lifestyle change.
Sure.
And that's something that we talk about all the time. But in terms of getting these players to peak performance, it should be a little bit exciting from a fan's perspective to say, these guys have not scratched the surface yet. They're not even a full year in the program. They're going to see gains right away because their bodies weren't doing anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
So now their bodies are starting to, you know, you're getting a they're adapting, they're evolving to this training. And I think it was all over Twitter right when it happened, like how good the players felt. You know, they were looking better, feeling better. That's a big part of it too. But then you're starting to see the results on the field as well. And what's great to see is, you know, an in-season program should not be a shutdown and not do anything. It should be, we aren't just maintaining, right? We're probably not going to do a lot of max out, let's try to squat the whole building.
Right.
It's going to be what we're talking about right now.
Speed
is
stuff.
How fast can we move? How quick can we do things?
And those are some of the guys. When Brian Kelly, he was asked last night after practice about some guys who have kind of stood out, guys who aren't necessarily playing but have stood out. He mentioned a bunch of quick twitch kind of guys. And that's what they're looking at. And that's also why it's exciting that when you talk about being a two-year program, all these freshmen, even guys like Heinisch and Tagovailoa-Mosa who have contributed, I mean, they haven't even begun to scratch the surface because now they get a whole offseason in this program.
I think what probably helped those guys, too, was to come in fresh with this new program.
Mm-hmm.
They probably saw some gains.
They didn't
know
what the old stuff
right.
was like.
They probably had some gains right away, which is why, you know, why they're playing and playing at a pretty high level right now early, or you know, throughout the early part of the season into now too.
Yep. 12:33, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about 33 Trucking and Josh Adams' Heisman candidacy and look specifically at Wake Forest, tomorrow's opponent. That is coming up next, presented by Sharply Training. It's the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharply on WSBT. Well, 36 on this Friday afternoon with Evan Sharply. I'm Sean Steyer, Sean and Sharply, and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. My microphone is playing with me right now. We have Notre Dame and Wake Forest coming up tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about the Demon Deacons here in just a minute. Wanted to touch on 33 Trucking, Josh Adams, with 1,169 yards, averaging 8.9 per carry, 9 touchdowns, 146 yards per game. Had his second 200-yard game last week against NC State. And he talked a little bit this week about what 33 Trucking, Notre Dame's slogan for the Heisman candidate, means to him.
I'm just now like understanding the concept of it. When they first came to me, it took me a while. I was like, I don't understand any of it, but let's go with it. It's definitely team oriented. It's you know, based on the team, of course, the 11 guys on special team, offense and defense. I'm loving the concept now, just of highlighting, you know, other guys on the team and highlighting the fact that, you know, those individual awards come from, you know, the result of the team. And I think a lot of people miss that. You wouldn't know about those individuals unless their team was doing good. So, we're definitely doing something special here. Just being able to have everybody included in that and have everybody share that experience is something special. And you definitely don't get that at a lot of places. And I think it's pretty cool what they're doing. I'm just now grasping the whole idea of it.
What do you think?
Still not buying it.
Do
you think anybody knew who Lamar Jackson's offensive line was last year?
I know.
Or Derrick Henry or Mariota or any of those guys?
I just, there's no way to know, but I just wonder if it works against him to some extent.
It's a selfish award. You have to be selfish.
Yeah.
And that's how you have to promote it too.
I get that he couldn't do, but nobody could, what they do, whether it's a running back or whatever, without an offensive line.
They got a great offensive line.
Yeah.
But my man Josh here, he's the one that's scoring the TDs and still running. So, I mean.
Still no Heisman love from ESPN. They tweeted a poll question yesterday asking, they gave four options of who people would vote for. Josh Adams is not among those four. Penn State's Saquon Barkley, Stanford's Bryce Love, who leads the nation in rushing, Ohio State quarterback JT Barrett, who everyone loves now because they had a comeback win last week over Penn State, Oklahoma's Baker Mayfield. Those are ESPN's four front runners.
Still don't know why Adams is not included.
I don't either.
How is he not? I don't get it.
He has to be included in the conversation.
What happened? Are you only allowed four guys? Are there only four options on the poll question on Twitter? Is that it?
I know. He's averaging 8.9 yards per carry. And whether we like it or not, like going back to David Pollack saying the things that he said and ESPN pushing just four guys, that affects opinion one way or another because people are voting on these things.
Right.
Ultimately.
I don't
get
it.
So if you're not even including him in the conversation,
look at the last 2 weeks.
How's anyone going to?
What more would you want? You're going to go over 200 yards? You're going to score two or
against
three touchdowns?
Against the sixth-ranked rushing defense in the country.
And USC's not a poor opponent either?
No.
I don't know. Did he say something to somebody? Make somebody mad? I don't know.
I don't either. I don't get it. Because when you look at Saquon Barkley, again, we know that he does more than just run the ball.
Right.
But he only has 801 rushing yards now.
Yeah, yards per carry went down.
He's averaging 5.8.
Michigan played pretty well, right, against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he does some things on special teams, but I don't know. I'm scratching my head on this one, Sean. I don't know.
And I realize that Stanford, Bryce Love is leading the nation in rushing and yards per carry as well, but it's not like he's on a preeminent team. It seems
that's
like
a good point.
Even last year when Christian McCaffrey was out there at the start of the season before he got hurt, I mean, they loved Christian McCaffrey. They were working hard to promote Christian McCaffrey as their Heisman guy, so I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Here's Adams talking about the Heisman spotlight and whether or not he's comfortable in it.
I wouldn't say it's uncomfortable. It's just who I am. I don't look at things that way. Obviously, I don't have a Twitter, so I don't really hear much about it unless you come up to me and tell me. But no, it's definitely cool. It's humbling. But again, it's not me. It's all God's work, and it's all the guys on my team who've helped me get there. So, just to see their excitement, especially, my teammates, I know it's because, they're not only happy for me, but they're happy with, how far this team has come. Because, that's a result of what we've done as a team and how far we've come and, the journey we've been on. So, I know they have good intentions and they know me. Sometimes you can't hide that excitement of wanting to tell somebody something. But, they're not blasting me with, news of this or that. But because they know that I'm not really paying attention to it anyway. So.
I'm just shocked that he doesn't have a Twitter account.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, I thought everybody
congratulations,
did, right?
Josh.
That's right. You're the one.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Because everybody else on your team does,
so,
it seems
so
like.
he can't cast a vote for himself then on Twitter for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he couldn't cast a vote for himself anyway.
Maybe that's why. Do they have the Twitter handle on there when you cast your vote of the player? Maybe that's why they couldn't find him on there.
Yeah. I think what people need to do if they want to keep pushing Josh Adams, if you're a Notre Dame fan, when you see ESPN tweeting this stuff, you need to make sure that you retweet it with the hashtag 33trucking and put something about Josh Adams in there if you want to get that trending, because otherwise I think it's an uphill battle. Fans are going to have to really push him hard, and every time that he has a big game, you need to work even harder to do it if you want your guy in there, because nobody's helping him out right now otherwise.
Which is
unfortunate because he's good.
Right? Yeah.
I don't care what anybody's in. I mean, come on. We've seen it all year. Again, sixth-ranked rushing defense in the nation dropped him to 19th after the game that he and Notre Dame had last week.
Well, 202 yards. He's going to have more opportunities. So we just keep saying that?
No, he is. He's going to have opportunities, but the opportunities are waning right now because there's only four more opportunities to go. And I don't know what more you can do than 202 yards against number six in the country.
Number six? Is that what they were?
Okay. That's what they were.
I don't think they are anymore.
No. No, they're not. It's 12:43. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we will hit Wake Forest, get some of Evan's thoughts about the matchup tomorrow. This is an interesting matchup because of the Mike Elko dynamic coming over from Wake Forest and now Notre Dame's defensive coordinator. And we'll talk a little World Series as well. A great World Series just wrapping up this week with the Houston Astros capping off the victory. We will do that when we return. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch presented by Sharpley Training on WSBT. WSBT 1247, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Sharpley Training, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Remember 2 years ago, Notre Dame went out to Boston College, and all of a sudden, the wheels fell off their college playoff hopes when they had a really bad game at Fenway Park. They won, but against a stinker of a BC team, they turned the ball over five times. Well, that's obviously the kind of thing that can't happen tomorrow against Wake Forest, a team that Notre Dame should beat. When you look at this team, Evan, what's the biggest concern that you have?
Well, I like their defense. I mean, I think Mike Elko left intact a good group, and really what he's kind of brought to Notre Dame is that mentality of playing free and loose, attacking, and that's really what Wake has continued to do, even though he's been gone. I mean, you look at right now, they're only giving up 21 points a game. That's top 40 right now. Mm-hmm. Their offense has actually improved a little bit compared to the last couple of years. They're sitting at 31 points a game. Still, that's going to be the biggest question mark for me, is the offensive side and losing one of their top receivers. And Jesse Bates is out as well, one of their better defensive backs at the safety position. But they have some players on the defensive side. I like their front seven. Their linebackers attack. They have a couple of guys on the defensive line, I think, that can get after the quarterback a little bit. But really, it's going to be – I don't think that they're going to be able to score enough points.
Yeah, and that's – what worries me is the defense more than anything. The best thing to come out of the game, and of course the week before that BC game, was Notre Dame-Wake Forest. It was relatively close, I think, based on 28-7, compared on how we thought that game was going to play out. The best thing that came out of the game was Josh Adams starting for an injured C.J. Procise. He had that 98-yard touchdown run to set a school record. Ran the ball 17 times, but 98 of those yards, or nearly 70%, came on that one play. 57% of the team's 171 rushing yards came on that play as well. They averaged 5.9 per carry on 30 attempts, but if you take that one attempt out, it's 2.5 per carry on 29 carries. And of course, that was when Mike Elko was the defensive coordinator. We had Connor O'Neill from the Winston-Salem Journal with Darren and I on SportsBeat earlier this week, and here's kind of his thoughts on the difference between Wake's defense now compared to when Elko was there.
They still run a 4-2-5 with the rover position as a safety linebacker hybrid. They're a little more aggressive. I think the biggest difference between Elko and their new coordinator, Jay Sauvel, is Elko was a lot more of a tactician and kind of a chess piece mover, and like to position his guys where the other team wouldn't be able to make plays. Jay Sauvel is a lot more hands-on in terms of coaching during the week and getting in there and acting as a position coach, which makes sense because that's his background before he was at Minnesota. And so it's become more of an aggressive defense without Elko. It's been more of a take risks to create tackles for loss. And on the other side of that, you have a few more big plays that you're giving up.
And that would be a big concern for me. And especially what you talked about, Jesse Bates, he's their safety and he's also their leading tackler, which in and of itself is not good if your safety is your leading tackler on your team. And now he's gone. He leads the team with 64 tackles, and that would say to me that their front seven is meant to be abused by Notre Dame's front, that there are going to be big opportunities in the run game.
And I found it interesting, too, that he said how much more hands-on the new coordinator is. You know, I felt like in the spring, Elko was pretty hands-on,
right,
coaching on the field. with the safety position in particular, because that was, you know, that was the position that he was coaching, but really throughout the entire defense. So to hear that, you know, is pretty surprising. They've got Duke Ejiofor, you know, on the defensive line, I think is a pretty good player. But overall, if you're looking, you know, if you're looking at their linebacker unit, I think there's a little bit of drop off in what they've had over the past few years. I'm not sure, you know, so I think Bates being out is a huge concern because of the number of tackles. I don't know if the number of tackles is necessarily concerning, just with how much safety rotation Elko and I believe the new coordinator have done. But if it does hold true that they are trying to be more aggressive, because if you look at Notre Dame's defense, I think you would say they appear to be more aggressive than they have been over the past few years. But it's that applied pressure. They're not really having to blitz.
Yeah, they don't have to take chances. They can get pressure with four guys.
They're getting pressure with four guys, or at the very least, they're creating lanes for the linebackers to make plays. Mm-hmm. So if it holds true that Wake is having to bring more pressures, that does not bode well for the Demon Deacons.
Well, and what gave Notre Dame some fits a couple of years ago was just the way Elko was able to bring pressures from different places.
Yeah, when pressures came, it was very specific. It was a corner blitz. It was, you know, it was a safety blitz, or a Sam Strong safety blitz where it was overloaded to his side. It wasn't a blitz every play. He was right, just like you said, it was almost like a chess move where he was very specific on timing and tendency on when he used those.
And that's, I agree with what Connor O'Neill was saying about the tactician part, because that's something that he seems to do really well, is find the mismatches where he can capitalize.
Seen it on
that
third
stuff.
Down a lot too.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. All right. Real quick, World Series. Astros. Oh, they beat the Dodgers in seven games. Great World Series. A new World Series record. 25 home runs hit in that series.
And Springer tied Jackson for most in a series, too, with five?
Yep, five by the World Series.
So let me
MVP.
Ask you this question.
Okay.
Do you think the baseballs are juiced?
I guess maybe the definition of juiced is
how
the
did
big
Jackson
thing.
Hit five?
Right? Sounds like, yeah, that's right.
It must have been juiced then.
It sounds like something's different, but, I mean, to me, these are two analytically driven teams. Maybe Dave Roberts relied too much on the analytics with all the pitching moves that he made.
I thought so.
But also the trend right now, when you look at Gabe Kapler going from the Dodgers, becoming the Phillies manager, Dave Martinez going from the Cubs to become the Nationals manager, and it's a big part, the two big things. One thing we touched on last week relating to the young players, the other thing is the analytics, and it makes me wonder more and more if Joe Girardi, for example, will ever manage again.
And kids, if you're listening right now, hit the ball in the air.
There you go.
We call it 180s or 360s. Can you figure that one out right there? 180s, doubles and home runs.
There you go.
And if you looked at in this World Series of the runs scored, there was almost 90+% of the runs were scored on home runs.
Amazing. And that's what they're teaching at Sharpley Training,
that's
too, right?
That's what they teach there.
All right. Take a time out. Evan's prediction coming up next. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on WSBT.
Yeah.
It's back.
Had to send Evan out with a bang today.
All right.
With good vibrations.
Here we go.
We've got 2 minutes to go. Real quick, did you have any other final thoughts on baseball World Series before we wrap it up?
I saw they released the odds for next season. They had the Dodgers number one.
That's right.
I also, the Yankees came in at five. Houston, I think, was three. Who am I missing? Nationals were fourth.
Nationals were in there.
And then who is number two? Who would I be missing? It wasn't the Red Sox, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
I don't know why I'm blanking on this.
I know it's easy to say, though, right now, because, of course, the first thing everyone wants to say is, well, the Astros are built to win next year and for the next few years. Well, so are the Cubs. And the Cubs got back to the playoffs. So are the Indians, for that matter. But
The Indians were number two.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's who it was.
That's right. But, I mean, they both, it's not easy to get there's, back I mean, there every yeah, year. The Astros are going to find that
those,
out now.
Those five teams right there are all really good teams.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we got a minute to go. Prediction, Notre Dame Wake Forest tomorrow.
I like Notre Dame. I do. You know, I think right now the spread's at 14. I'm kind of sitting on the fence with that right now. You know, the Notre Dame defense hasn't given up 20. So I'm right at 20.
When you talk about the spread, not that we talk about it that much for entertainment purposes only. The only two times they haven't covered, though, well, the only time is Georgia.
That was the only time.
I know they didn't make the over-under against North Carolina, but those were the only two times they haven't made the over-under this year.
So, I mean, Notre Dame's offense is continuing to get better. Their offensive line is doing a really nice job blocking, opening up holes for Josh Adams. Adams is running hard. I think that you're going to continue to see the passing game evolve a little bit, maybe not much, but a little bit. And then defensively, I mean, I sound like a broken record. It's the same thing every week. Create turnovers, get off the field on third down. 34-20 Irish.
Got to go. I'm taking Notre Dame. I'll give you my score prediction tomorrow. Game Day Sports Beat.